So it's an interesting thing, this sermon title I have. Puritans or Pirates, Unitarian Universalism, or whatever it is. It's been a variety of forms. I've got more questions about this than I think almost any other sermon topic. And at least one of my children is upset that I'm not preaching the whole sermon in pirate voice. But to be perfectly honest, I was afraid it might stick. And then, what do you do? When I was in seminary, I was required to participate in some kind of a cross-cultural experience. I chose a three-week trip with other United Church of Christ folk to Germany to visit three different congregations in the Evangelische Kirche, a sibling denomination of the United Church of Christ. I was young. I was 24. There was one other 20-something on that trip, and all the other folks were retirees, 65 or above. We were a group of people gathered in a shared endeavor to learn more about this sibling church, how their church was the same and how it was different than our church. But I don't remember us really taking time to talk about what it would mean to travel together, how we would get along, what would happen if we didn't get along, how would we settle conflicts. I would not call that group I was part of covenanted. Even though we chose to travel together, and even for that short time, we were beholden to one another and dependent on one another. Most days, we had a schedule of things that were assigned already for us to do, but one day, we were on our own. Several of us decided to go on a hike. I, as I am wont to do, took the lead. Some of you will recognize how foolish this was, since I really don't have a sense of direction. But I was a seminarian. I was training to be in the ministry, and I was supposed to be, you know, leadership material. And so I took that role, and the people happily gave it to me. So off we went on a hike, and lost we got. Not terribly lost, but lost enough that some of the folks who were older and perhaps could not hike as fast as I struggled. I will admit, I was not a good leader. I did not pay attention to the larger group. I did not pace myself so that all could participate. We found our way back. I don't remember how. I have vague memories of one of the older gentlemen gently stepping in and steering us in the right direction. What I do remember about that experience was how badly I felt afterward that I had not cared more for the people around me. I had not cared better. And really, covenants are about us taking care of one another. I'll wait for you. And if I should fall behind, wait for me. Covenant is a bit of a two-edged sword for us Unitarian Universalists. We are people defined by our covenant. We have no central creed that defines us. Really, all we have is this central promise to one another. Here at First UU, we have a congregational covenant, and our National Unitarian Universalist Association has a covenant that contains our beloved seven principles, and it begins with these words. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote. We do not even ask people to believe the seven principles. We just ask them to affirm and promote. We define ourselves by our relationships, and we talk about being in relationship. But here is that other edge of the sword. If some are in relationship, then some must not be in relationship. By defining ourselves as a covenanted community, might it mean that some folk are out of covenant? There is an exclusivity to the concept of covenant, and generally speaking, we UUs do not like to admit to our exclusive behaviors. Our history is that the Puritans came over from England seeking religious freedom, or at least freedom from the dominant religion in England. The Puritans saw themselves as creating a city on a hill, a place of godliness that would shine out to all the world. And in their Calvinist theology, it was predestined that the folks who were blessed by God would prosper. And so failure was not simply not attaining one's goals. It was an indicator that God would send you to hell. The stakes were high for the Puritans. So if you were not following the covenant and possibly leading your fellow Puritans astray, one possible outcome was either expulsion from the community or even death. We can think that the religiosity of the Puritans is the cause of their rigidity and violent reactions to people breaking covenants. But they were not the only people to live in covenanted communities. And here is where the pirates come in. Because they had their own covenants. They called them codes, pirate codes. Not many of them have survived. If the authorities captured a pirate ship, one of the first things the captain would do would be to burn the code or throw it overboard so that it could not be used against them in a court of law. But I did find one example from a pirate, Henry Morgan, and I'm going to read just an abbreviated version of the code. Every man has a vote in affairs of moment, has equal title to the fresh provisions or strong liquors at any time seized, and may use them at pleasure unless a scarcity, not an uncommon thing among them, makes it necessary for the good of all to vote a retrenchment. So everything was pretty much owned in common and shared, and if things were scarce, they would renegotiate. No person to game at cards or dice for money. Evidently the movies have it wrong. This was my favorite. The lights and candles to be put out at 8 o'clock at night. If any of the crew after that hour still remained inclined for drinking, they were to do it on the open deck. Pirates had a bedtime. To keep their peace, pistols and cutlass clean and fit for service. I think that's the pirate Boy Scout version, always be prepared. No boy or woman to be allowed amongst them. To desert the ship or their quarters in battle was punished with death or marooning. No striking one another on board, but every man's quarrels to be ended on shore at sword and pistol. So as long as you were on ship, you had to be on good behavior. No man to talk of breaking up their way of living till each had shared 1,000 pounds. In order to do this, if any man should lose a limb or become a cripple in the service, he was to have $800 out of the public stock, and for lesser hurts proportionately. So they took care of their own. And finally, the musicians were to have a rest on the Sabbath day, but the other 6 days and nights, none with special favor. So I don't think we should be romanticizing pirates. They were violent predators of the sea, but among themselves they had a code, a covenant. They had a bedtime, they were to treat each other well while on the ship, and if one was hurt, they were to be taken care of financially. Susan Ritchie, a UU historian, tells us, "When you think about it in some weird ways, the pirates and the Puritans have quite a bit in common, because they're both groups of people who hated hierarchy, who associated hierarchy with oppression, and who longed to find some kind of space where their personal practice wasn't dictated by others. I'll wait for you, and if I should fall behind, wait for me." The world is different now than it was in the 1500s and 1600s. An obvious statement, I know. But consider only some of the differences. When the Puritans arrived here, they thought they were establishing that city on a hill. They would create the kingdom of God here on earth. And the doctrine of discovery, that idea that this land was put here precisely for the benefit of the white man, meant that there were seemingly unlimited resources. This country was so big, the land looked infinite. But we are not there now. We know that our land is limited. The population of the world is too large. We know that we are using Earth's resources at a rate that means we need something like 2.5 Earths to be sustainable. So maybe we need to be doing covenant differently. Maybe it should not be that you are part of a covenant in order to be part of the saved group. Maybe it should be that you are in the covenant in order to be in the group that is fighting the powers that are shortening our future. Maybe we need to recognize that our old concept of covenant was based on either-or thinking. You're in or you're out, you're saved or you're damned. And now we understand that relationships and communities are much more complex than that. Maybe we need to learn that there is a different way to covenant. I'll wait for you, and should I fall behind, wait for me. So we know that if you are outside the covenant, you can't just move down the road or take an adventure out and start your utopian society. The growth of population, our 21st century of understanding of science, and the fact of climate change tells us, as nothing else, that there is no other earth, there is no other table for us to be at. As UUs, we can show the world what it means now to be in community, in covenant. Sue Phillips said last spring in our district assembly, "If we walk alone every which way, charting our own course, it is not possible to be religious people. We may be able to practice spirituality by ourselves, but it is only by walking with others that personal spirituality is transformed into a religious life. I would propose that we cannot be Unitarian Universalists by ourselves." I think what she was saying is that living a covenant is a way of living the interdependent web, and the world needs that message now. And there is no way we can get outside of that interdependent web. We are here, we're here, right? There's no arguing with that. Sue Phillips also said, UUism tells us that we are called to create beloved community within community. And she went on to describe our theological history and how, in the midst of radical diversity of beliefs, we have been able to hold together because we have followed this thread of covenant. It is so everyday for us. It is hard to understand how hard that is. I have a friend who was previously a Baptist minister, and he said it's much easier to be a Baptist minister than a UU minister because all the cats are pointed in the same direction. Sue Phillips called us theological badasses. All of our remarks, all of my remarks about our history came about our struggle with who is UU and who is not come down to this. A covenant is a promise, not a statement. It is an aspiration, not a state of achieved being. It is changing, not fixed. Each of us will, in our own behaviors, move in and out of covenant, closer and further away from that table. If we make a covenant, it will be broken. We humans are the promise makers and the promise breakers. We cannot understand what is sacred until we desecrate it. The beauty of covenant is not that it is anti-establishment. The beauty is not that we are some sort of rebel separatist from the rest of American society, thumbing our nose at powers that be like the Puritans or the pirates. The beauty of covenant is that we are intentional and transparent about our relationship with one another. Unlike that trip of mine in seminary, we are transparent about our promises to stay in relationship, to stay at the table, to come back again and again and again to the relationship, to care for one another. So we UUs, are we Puritans or are we pirates? I think we are neither. I think it was a trick question. We are not defined by our history, but rather by our aspirations. And I would like to think that we aspire to be more like the Zen teacher in our story this morning, seeking to keep all at the table. The great American storyteller, parable maker, minstrel, rock musician Bruce Springsteen set out a description of covenant in one of the most succinct ways I have ever heard. I'll wait for you, and if I should fall behind, wait for me. In a world without end, may we